You're listening to Cattail.
You're listening to Cattails, and I'm Cat. In this show, I call France to chat with one of punk's true originals. He's the bassist who's toured with Iggy Pop, played in Cheap and Nasty, has been a member of the UK Subs on and off for over 40 years, and has recently released his first solo album, Your Disobedient Servant, with a who's who of punk royalty guesting on it. Alvin Gibbs chats with me about the highs and lows of being in the UK Subs, what he got up to in between, all about his new autobiography Diminished Responsibility, and gives me the scoop on who would like to be part of his Disobedient Servants on his second album. This is The One with Alvin Gibbs.
Hi, Kat. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
Okay, pretty good. It's very hot here, so my poor dog is... I've just sorted out a fan for him. So we can lie in front of the fan in the lounge, but I'm going to go out in the courtyard and capture some of this sun before it goes down.
Bless you.
Yeah, I'm good.
Good.
Things are okay. I mean, considering I'm not working, can't play, I can't tour and all of that. But the good side of it is, of course, I've had more time at home than I've had probably in the last 12 years.
It's funny, isn't it? Everybody's saying the same thing and actually really quite enjoying it.
Yeah. No, Charlie is definitely enjoying it. In fact, it's a bit disturbing. Every time I phone him, he's like, yeah, it's great. I'm not having a problem with it at all. I'm like, oh, God.
He's just doing another cat painting to keep himself busy.
Well, exactly. Yeah, his output of cat paintings is extraordinary.
I know, they're very nice, actually. I've seen them.
No, they're awesome. I mean, he's very good. Good, you know, for some reason he excels at cats, so, and people like cats.
They do.
Merger.
It is really. Oh, yeah. So it's nice and hot there, is it? It's been raining all day here, so I'm envious,
really?
Now. I've got sun envy.
it's going to go up like quite high. I mean, I suppose, what's it here, 8 o'clock, and I would guess it's about 27 degrees, but it's going to sort of go up into the mid 30s and things like that next few days. So, I like it, but it's not for everyone.
No, it's not for me, really. Not with my pale skin, it'd be no good. So, how long have you been out there then? What took you out there in the first place? It's a beautiful place to be, France.
It's a bit of a long story, but basically, I was living in London. I was married at the time. And my then wife and I came out to visit a guy who used to play for the UK Sub in sort of around about 1982, 1983. In fact, he was the last drummer who played with the Subs just before I quit with Nicky Garrett in 83, called Kim Wiley. And strange thing, but he went from drums to flying for planes for KLM.
Oh, wow.
Dutch National.
That's
very
amazing. Where did that come from?
I know, none of us saw it coming. I knew he was interested in flying. I knew he got his sort of private pilot's license, but then he decided to give up music altogether. And he had a business for a while, pine furniture and flooring or something, and then gave up that and took his exams and all of that, and then he ended up doing that, and his wife's an air stewardess, and they decided to come and live. Well, they only live about half an hour from where I live. So I came over here with my then wife, visited a couple of times, loved it, saw what you could get in terms of property for the money. I was living in West Hampstead, which is a sort of nice part of North London, and I was looking into buying the flat I was renting. And I think, I mean, we're talking 2002 here, they wanted about 195,000 or something like that, or 200,000 for it back then. It was only a small one-bedroom flat.
Yeah.
And then I saw Kim's place with a swimming pool and, you know, sort of a five-bedroom house without buildings and all this land, and he even had a little sort of stream that was a private stream at the end of his land, and he paid like 120,000 for that, you know.
Thank
and I was
you.
Like, oh, it's a no-brainer, really.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So I started looking. Yeah, so I started looking and ended up finding this house in the southwest of France, and love it, absolutely adore it. I've been here since Well, I've been living here full time since 2005 because I spent a couple of years sort of getting things done to the house, you know, sort of restoring it, really. It was built in 1860. It's a beautiful house, but it needed stuff doing to it. New roof and all kinds of different things doing to it. But it has such character, you know, wooden floors and high ceilings and marble fireplaces and all that stuff. And yeah, and I've got a huge stone barn. I've got a gatehouse, which I've just had restored recently. So I'm going to be renting that out. And it's fantastic. Really one of the best things I've ever done.
The only problem you've got, though, is trying to actually coordinate everything, haven't you? Because it must be quite difficult when you're over there, the UK subs are over here. How do you manage all that?
Well, even in the UK, they're all split up. I mean, Steve, the guitar player, lives in Sunderland. Charlie lives on the south coast of England. And Jamie, until recently, was living in the Midlands. We were all over the place. Well, it's quite easy, really. When you tour as much as we do, you don't really need to get together very much. And I mean, we never rehearse or anything like that. We just learn the stuff individually. If we're going to change the songs or whatever, we just learn them individually. And then when we do, just before a tour, at the first sound check, we'll do a long sound check and go through the new stuff. But we've all been doing this a long time, so we're professional musicians. Yeah. If you can't do that at this stage of the game, then you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, that's true. You could do it with your eyes closed, really, can't you? By now, I should think.
I have done. Semi-conscious, I've done it. Autopilot.
Oh, wonderful. Because, I mean, you've been part of the UK subs on and off, I think, isn't it, for about 40 years or so.
Yeah.
So why have you had those breaks in between? Tell me, did you just get itchy feet or better offers, or did you just have a big paddy and say, that's it, I can't work with you lot anymore?
I quit the band in 83. Three of us quit the band. Myself, Nicky Garrett, who was the original guitar player, and Kim Wiley, the guy who I came to visit. We had just completed a tour of Poland in 1983. So we actually the first band to play behind the then Iron Curtain, you know, it was still under Soviet control. And it was an amazing tour. It was extraordinary. It was just incredible. A real eye-opener to see how people were living as well, you know. Queues for things and the terrible infrastructure and... And of course, the whole solidarity kind of movement was sort of off the ground, you know, trying to get independence from the Soviet state and all of that. So along come we come along, you know, playing our songs of kind of revolution and you know, right and all those kind of songs. And it was great. I really enjoyed it and everything. But while we were on that tour, Nicky and I were saying to Charlie, you know, we've got to start doing things more professionally. Charlie kind of likes to work, or he used to. He used to like to work in this sort of chaotic kind of way where, you know, do an odd gig there, do gig there, and, you know, whatever came along, he would say yes to and things like that. And we were saying, look, we've got to do a proper tour and organise things, and we've got to do, you know, we've got to have it and then do an album and then do it and then free up some time so we can go to other places like South America or Australia and he didn't like that. He booked a gig at some pub upon our return. We'd been playing to like 20,000 people a night in ice hockey stadiums, and he wanted to play to Tooting Castle or something. And we went, Charlie, I thought we agreed that we weren't going to do this anymore, this random sort of gig thing. And he's like, well, if you guys don't want to do it, I'll do it with other people. And I said, well, that's fine, you know, if you want to do it as the Urban Dogs or Charlie Harper and Friends. But you can't do it as UK subs because we're the UK subs. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it with other people and it's going to be the UK subs. So Nicky got really angry and said, well, if you think so little of my contribution to the band that you think you can just get some other guitar player in and call it the UK subs, and I quit. At which point I said, yeah, I feel the same about me, you know, I quit. And then Kim said, I'm out too, you know. Yeah. So that was it. So that's how I left the first time.
Yeah.
And then I went to America My first wife, this is a different wife, my first wife was American, and we'd met in London, but I just got fed up with London at that point. I know music was changing, you know, punk was on the ropes, really. There was all that electronic music coming through. And I just thought, well, I just need a change. And we went to, initially San Francisco, and then we went to LA. And I was in LA for 5 years. And I played with a band there called Broken Glass, and we got a deal with Chrysalis Records. And we were just about to go in to do our first album. And then I got a call from Andy McCoy, who used to play in Hanoi Rock, saying, hey, look, I'm going to do this world tour with Iggy Pop, but he needs a bass player. Do you want to do it? So I said, of course. And so I met Iggy, and that was it. I was off on an 8-month world tour of with Iggy Pop around the world, and it was fantastic. You know, it's one of the best experiences of my whole career. And then after that, I was on a retainer from Iggy, you know, just to keep me available. Yeah. But nothing was happening, nothing seemed to be going on. And then another guy from Hanoi Rocks, this guy, Nasty Suicide, phoned me up and said, hey, I've got this band together called Cheap and Nasty, and we've got a deal lined up, we've got management, we need a bass player, we need a songwriter too. Mm. Would you be up for coming back to London and joining up? You know, you'd be on a wage straight away and all that stuff, and there's, you know, publishing money. And and my wife, even though she was American, she hated the States. That's why she went to London. She was a real Anglophile. Mm-hmm. She hated Los Angeles in particular. So I said, well, and she was driving me nuts, you know. She was just driving me nuts. So I saw this as an opportunity to sort of placate her and also go back and have work waiting, you know.
Yeah.
And so I joined this band, Cheap and Nasty. We made 2 albums. We did a lot of touring in Japan. That was our main market. We toured in Scandinavia and in the UK as well, and it was good. It was a good 5-6 years with them. And then basically Nasty left the band. He left his wife and moved to Tokyo to live with a woman he met over there. So the band folded. And then, you know, Charlie would phone me up from time to time and say, oh, you know, do you want to fill in for us some shows for us, or do you want to do some Urban Dogs gigs with us or whatever? And then I did an Urban Dogs album, I think, in 97, that's right. Nicky Garrett phoned up and said he wanted to do a reunion album with myself and Charlie. So we went to San Francisco. And we ended up being 2 albums. We recorded that such an amount of material, ended up being 2 records, Quintessentials and a second album called Riot. Mm-hmm. And we toured that around the States. And then I came back, got ill. I had this neurological illness. It put me out of the game for about 2 years. And then I came back doing an album called Wipeout Beach for the Urban Dogs, and then we did some shows. And then slowly I started to play more and more with the subs, fill in more and more and do more and more. And I ended up doing a sort of a big European tour with the subs in 2000. And that's pretty much how I got back into it. I was doing certain tours, and then other tours I wasn't doing. And then I suppose for about the last 12 years or so, because I then moved to France, so I had to have some time off to sort things out.
Yeah.
But I suppose the last 12 years, I've just been a full-time member of the subs, done all the tours and all the gigs and everything. So it's become a band again, you know, proper band, you know.
Come full circle for you in a way, hasn't it, really? That's great.
and so far it's like everyone's, you know, got on well. We had a guitar player called Jet, who basically 5 years ago we had to sort of exchange him for Steve Strawn, who now plays with us, because Jet was just didn't want to do it anymore, really. He had become a semi-detached member of the band, really. He wasn't infused anymore. He was sort of just going through the motions, and So we had a chat with him, and we decided to, you know, it'd be best for him to go.
Yes.
Yeah, and he decided it was best for him to go. So, that was fine.
That's fine, isn't it? If it's like that, it's not so bad, is it? I mean, I was reading up on you all, and fabulous. Yeah. Be quite a few former members, haven't there, of the band? Crikey, I've counted on one list, there was 72, I think, and on the other list, there was like 65. I mean, that's a lot of people who've been in and out of the UK subs. Why?
I don't know. Well, like, really, after Nicky Garrett and myself and Kim Wiley left in 83, Charlie just, you know, I said about, you know, he used to like to sort of do things haphazardly. It was always very chaotic, you know. And it was just an open door policy, you know, whoever was available, whoever could do something, you know, which is why he used to call me from time to time. I mean, I remember turning up at his house a few times and away his flat, and he'd be on the phone, and I'd sit down, and he'd told me, that, you know, oh, we got a gig in Newcastle and a gig in Manchester, so be at my house at 2. So I'd get to his place for 2. He'd be on the phone, and he'd be going, all right, yeah, okay, yeah. And I'd be going, what's going on, Charlie? He's going, oh, I'm trying to get a van to drive. I said, what now? We're supposed to leave now, you know. And then, there's been a few times where he's forgotten to get a drummer. we've turned up a show, and it's like, well, where's Gary, the drummer you said he was playing? I thought I called him. I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, embarrassing stuff, you know, like... Charlie would then go on stage and say, yeah, he's the only one out there can play drums and knows some UK sub songs. You know, it's like, oh, my God. Yeah, it was bad, you know, it was bad. And then eventually Yuko, his wife, started to realise that this wasn't a good way to proceed. And she started work with me and Jamie, the drummer, in trying to get things more on a professional footing.
Yeah.
Of course, Charlie didn't like that initially, but... But then he saw the the benefits of it, you know, in terms of how, you know, making more money and playing better places and staying in good hotels and not just, you know, kind of rough and having good, you know, transport. And so now he's...
He likes it now, doesn't he? Because it's organised.
Now he moans. He moans if the van's not good enough. Or how dare they put us in this horrible 3-star hotel.
Terrific.
There's a 5-star down the road. You know, his kind of outlook has changed. And also, you know, because we were making better money and all of that, and we were a reliable band and a proper band again, he made enough money to actually buy a house, you know.
Yes, yeah, that's right. It all follows, doesn't it? It's about running a business after all, isn't it?
It is, ultimately, yeah. I mean, every now and again, he still tries to make a show of like, oh, well, not to, you know, I'm not in it for the money or whatever. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's the punk roots, you see. It's that rebellion, isn't it?
Yeah, I think he's got an image to maintain. Yeah. So fair enough.
So let's take a break now and listen to a track from your solo album, Your Disobedient Servant, and this is called Ghost Train.
I'm
Alvin Gibbs of the UK Subs and the Disobedient Servants here, speaking with his voice, saying, you're listening to Cattails.
So come on then, tell me, why has it taken you so long to do a solo album then? Because that, of course, came out last year, didn't it? But, you know, you've been 40 years in the industry. You know, have you been putting it off, or did you just not fancy doing it?
Well, I mean, I've been writing songs for 40 years, you know. I've written quite a lot of songs for both the UK Subs over the years and for Cheap and Nasty. And I've always been writing and everything, but... Many people have said over the years, oh, you should, you know, we really like the songs that you write for the Subs. They're more sort of 77 punk, or they're more this or that. And I thought, you know, and they were like, dude, you should do a record, your own record, do a solo album. It'd be great. A lot of people would like it. And over the years, I've like, oh, no, I haven't got time to do that. Or, I know, it's sort of smacked of kind of a bit indulgent, or, you know, smacked of pride, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it just struck me as being kind of a vanity thing.
Yeah.
And I just thought, so I resisted. And then every time we used to go to Poland, our Polish promoter, Krzysztof, he used to... put on like four or five shows for us in Poland as part of a European tour, and we became good friends. And he'd always say, look, you know, because he would drive from show to show, and he would say, look, come in the car with me, and I'll tell you about all the terrible people and all the stories that, you know, about how John Lydon had behaved disgracefully, or Sinead O'Connor had wanted her dressing room painted a different colour, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was great, you know, and we'd drive from place to place and became good friends. And every time he'd say to me, you should do a solo album. And I'd go, no, Krzysztof. He'd go, yeah, people in Poland love your songs. I'm telling you, you should do a solo album. And he kept on and on and on every year. So when I was just about to turn 60 and I was in Poland, And he said, look, you're going to be 60. It's now or never. You've got to do it. So I said, oh, all right, I'll see if I can get some time and whatever. And we did have a bit of time. So I called up my friend Steve Krill, who at the time was playing for the Godfathers. And I hadn't known the guy since I was 16. We used to play in a little rock band in Croydon, you know, bedroom band, you know, so learning to play, you know, as a band. And I said, look, I'm going to do the solo album. I'd like to do it at your studio, your home studio in Soho. And he was like, yeah, great, fantastic. So, and he co-produced the record with me, and we got in, of course, some great people.
I've seen.
Yeah, Lee Hegarty from The Ruts, Mick Rossi from Salter and the Dogs, and Brian James, who used to play with The Damned, and Barrington from The Saints, and, just great, you know. Jamie played drums, of course. So that really, really helped, you know. When you've got good players like that on a record, it helps enormously. And it turned out so much better than I thought it was going to turn out, you know. I was really pleased with it. And a lot of critical acclaim for it, and it sold very well. You know, it's first pressing sold out.
Brilliant.
And so it did a second pressing. That's pretty much close to selling out. So it's been good. It's all been positive.
So you're going to do another album now, because the first one was called Your Disobedient Servant, wasn't it? And of course you've got all your disobedient servants around you who sound like they're contributing there. If you're going to do another one then, are you looking at changing the lineup a little bit, or is it just that's the band and that's going to stay as it is?
Well, it's become more of a band, not permanent. I mean, I had to do some shows to promote the record. So I did a tour last June. And the core of the band was Jamie, Lee Hegarty from Ruts DC and myself. But then on certain shows, we would have Steve join us. And we did the 100 Club. We headlined the 100 Club, which was great. And we had Barrington from The Saints join us for a song. And we had Timo Kautio, who had played guitar in Cheap and Nasty. He was the second guitarist in Cheap and Nasty, come on stage and do a song that he played on the album. And so that's the core of it, really, is myself, Jamie and Lee. But Steve's become sort of the go-to guy if we want a second guitar player. Captain Sensible, Captain Sensible says he wants to play on it, so that's cool. And I've got some ideas about some other people I need to contact to see if they're interested. But core of it will be Lee, myself, Jamie, and probably Steve, and then guest players and certain tracks. Certain players suit certain kinds of songs, really.
Yeah.
So, until the songs are actually recorded, I won't really know who to call. I've got people in mind, but
yeah.
I wait until the album is done in a basic format, and then get people to come in and embellish it and all.
Yeah.
Play on it if they're available.
Yeah, and I suppose that's it, isn't it? You've got this diverse range of songs because, the album, the first album, was quite diverse, wasn't it, really? It wasn't all the same. So you were able to pick and choose people maybe to enhance that sound or change it a little bit to what you had in your head initially.
Absolutely. I even got on Heaven and the Angels, I've got an old friend of mine, Mel Weston, to do some keyboards. He played some piano on there and put some sound, atmospheric sound things, and he's a film composer, from Croydon, like Steve and myself, that I knew when I was 16, and he used to be in that same little band. We used to rehearse at his parents' house in his bedroom, but he did very well for himself. He composes music has composed music with Hans Zimmer. He's just done some music for the James Bond movie. So he's done extremely well for himself. But he's still like, I'd like to play on one of on a track on your album. So I sent. He's got a home studio, so I sent him Heaven and the Angels as it was, and he completely transformed it. It sounds so much better with his input. It's great.
Yeah, it's good to get other people involved, isn't it? And of course, with
Absolutely.
All the people that you know in the industry over all these years, then there's lots to choose from, isn't there? But let's think about all those people. Do they all appear in your new book? Because of course you've got your new memoirs out as well, haven't you? Diminished Responsibility. So
yeah.
After you've told all the stories about them, they probably won't want to play on your album.
Diminished Responsibility, My Life as a UK Sub, and Other Strange Stories, this is volume one. So this first volume really is about how I got interested in music. I initially wanted to be a professional footballer.
Wow.
And play for my ultimate ambition was to play for the team I support, Crystal Palace, who are the team that you support if you're from Croydon, of course.
Yeah.
And then I saw Mark Boland playing Get It on Top of the Pops, and I was just amazed at the way he played and looked, and there was all these like really attractive women in hot pants dancing around him, and I thought, wow, that looks like a really good job. I'd love to do that, Much better than cleaning the first team's boots when you're taking trials for Crystal Palace. So that's what got. That was the initial. That was sort of catalyst for the change. And then I started to get interested in rock music, and I learned to play a bit on guitar, and had a school band with a couple of friends. We weren't very good. We were terrible actually, but it was a start. And so I tell the story of that, and it goes up to when I joined my first punk band, The Users, in 1978, and then touring with Brian James after he left The Damned, supporting The Police in Europe and various bands in Europe, and then joining The Subs. And the story goes right up to the story I told you earlier in 1983, where I quit the band with Nicky Garrett and Kim Wiley. That's the end of Volume 1.
Right.
Now, next year, Volume 2 will come out, and they'll pick up the story from when I go to America, play with Iggy Pop, play with Cheap and Nasty, and then return to The Subs up to the present day. So none of the people connected with my solo album are actually referenced in this first volume.
Oh, phew, we're okay then. They'll say yes.
Yeah. So I'd better get the album done before that comes out. No, I mean, most of the people I've worked with have been great, you know.
Yeah.
They really have. There's, I suppose there's a couple of people that you just think, well...
There's always a few, isn't there, along the way. You know, you can't avoid it in life, I think that's true.
Yeah, and sort of tragic people as well, like Steve Roberts, you know, who was a fantastic drummer. Yeah. And then Nicky Charlie and I had to sack him, this is in like 1982, because he couldn't handle his drink, you know. And he just, when he would drink, he would do stupid stuff and get us thrown out of hotels, and his drumming was all like, you know, he was doing all these silly stunts, and in the end we were going to the States for a long tour, and we just thought he's going to end up getting a shot.
Literally,
if he pulls some of this stuff in the States that he's doing, we're going to end up getting shot. So we, you know, it's kind of a tragedy, really, because he was so talented as a drummer, but he always wanted to be the centre of attention. You know, he always wanted to be more than just the drummer. He wanted to be the sort of star of the show, and which he's tried to be. He's got his own sort of alter ego now, and he's sort of come back at the age of 64 as a sort of glam rock.
Oh, has he? Oh,
but anyway.
Moving on.
But it hasn't really worked for him.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because if he had stuck to what he was good at, drumming, he could have played with, you know, Metallica You know, he was that good, you know? Crazy.
You hear so many of these stories, don't you, with the industry. It's such a, you know, it has so many temptations that it does ruin a lot of people's career and their talent goes out the window, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, we've all had our wobbles, you know. Charlie has, I have. But not to the extent where I've allowed it to, you know, destroy... Well, I love doing it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you know what, Alvin? It's been wonderful speaking with you. I have to say,
it's been
terrific. And I will have to have another chat when Volume 2 comes out of your memoirs.
Yeah,
and the next album, to see who's on it. You're an absolute star, and it's been really brilliant speaking with you.
Well, likewise, Kate.
Speak soon.
I think it's wine time now.
Definitely. Actually, I need to go and get one myself. I'm a bit late tonight.
No, we can't have that. Come on.
Enjoy. Yeah. You take care,
right.
Alvin. Speak soon.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, cheers. You've been listening to Cattails. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.